ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Tammy Shipley believed someone was out to hurt her.
I thought someone was after me and I wanted to just be safe.
She's put under 24-hour surveillance.
I tried to get in contact multiple times.
Can you please make the phone call? Nobody knows where I am.
And then something strange happens.
She just drank and drank and had something like 20 litres of pure water.
Ambulance emergency.
I've got a woman unconscious.
Tammy's story. Search Background Briefing on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
New data shows Australia's economy was already slowing in the first 3 months of the year before the full impact of a series of interest rate hikes and the war in the Middle East washed through. So what does it mean for the outlook for interest rates? And what will yesterday's wage hike from the Fair Work Commission mean for Australia's workers? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm ABC business reporter Steph Chalmers.
Steph, so nice to see you on this GDP day. Now, GDP kind of has always been the gold standard when it comes to data about the health of the Australian economy. I feel like in recent times, though, inflation has kind of taken centre stage, partly because inflationary pressures are the most important task or most difficult problem to solve for the Reserve Bank and for the government, but also because we're now getting monthly data. It's closer to being real-time reality. GDP, unfortunately, this data is only up until the end of March, so it's hopelessly out of date before we've even been able to have a proper look at it. What did you make of today's figures? Did it meet expectations? Was there anything particularly interesting for you?
As you say, this is really not that timely now that we're getting used to that more frequent data to give us a picture of the economy. But GDP, obviously gross domestic product, and that's something we sort of use as a proxy for economic growth. It encapsulates things like household consumption, business investment, residential construction, government spending, and then the value of exports. So imports detract from GDP and exports add to it. So that's broadly what we're looking at. And it came in worse than expected for the quarter that we're talking about, which is January, February and March. It came in at just 0.3% expansion. Economists were expecting around 0.5%, although the forecasts were pretty mixed, but it's quite a bit of a slowdown from the previous quarter, which was 0.9% expansion, and that was actually revised up. So we've had quite a significant slowing from the end of last year to the start of this year.
There's that difficulty, isn't there, about is this good or bad news? And it kind of depends on what your perspective is at the moment. I was surprised by the lack of consensus between economists, even yesterday after we'd had kind of some of the detail already released preliminary about GDP, you saw this real divergence in the big four banks. Their economists could not agree on what they thought was going to be shown in this data. The Commonwealth Bank expecting there'd be no growth at all, 0% for this quarter. On the other extreme, ANZ was suggesting it would be 0.5. Westpac and NAB got it right, 0.3, right in the middle there. But that question about is this good news or is it bad news? Yes, this is a dramatic slowing, and all other things being equal, that would be a bad thing. You want economic growth. Economic growth, in theory, leads to higher well-being from people. It gives people the capacity to buy more things. But the concern at the end of last year was we were already hitting constraints in the economy, and that high, well, it's not even that high, right?
Yeah.
But that relatively high economic growth was causing an outbreak of inflation that was difficult for the Reserve Bank to handle. So the fact that it has slowed down, on one hand, that means that we're going to have less growth. As I said, that's normally considered to be a bad thing. But in this current environment, maybe that's good because it takes the heat off the Reserve Bank to hike rates even further to deal with inflationary pressure.
Yeah, as you say, we were kind of coming from quite a good starting point as well. So even though we're slowing down, the economy is obviously still expanding. How much longer that'll be the case on a quarterly basis, I guess, remains to be seen. So we often look at the annual pace of growth, and it stayed steady at 2.5%, which was revised down. But the Reserve Bank expects the economy to grow at just 1.6% by the end of June, which is only another quarter away. So if their forecasts are to be correct, we're going to slow much further before then, and then even further by the end of December. So it's got further to run. And obviously, it's kind of the elephant in the room that economists and the RBA never like to say, but I think in order for them to kind of achieve their aim of bringing inflation down, they will be, you know, by design, trying to slow the economy. Mm. And that could lead to more people losing their jobs as well, which we have seen, you know, the unemployment rate rise to, I think it was the highest in a couple of years. So we are kind of slowly moving in that direction that we inevitably have to go to kind of take some of the heat out, I think.
Yeah, and this question about the R-word recession, the Commonwealth Bank in expecting that would be 0% growth this quarter effectively means you're flirting with recession, you know, a contraction in the economy. That isn't what has occurred, but Westpac, I think, is suggesting they think the next quarter could be negative. We could see a contraction. And then if you get two of those in a row, well, that's a technical recession. Now, there is a live question about, are we already seeing some recessionary forces within the economy at the moment? There are reasons to think that might be the case. And breaking down some of these numbers, it is interesting. On one hand, one of the positives was a big contribution to economic growth coming from business investment. Now, that surged 6.5%. That is the fastest rate of growth since the mining boom back in 2012. And it almost seems to be entirely driven by investment in data centers, which is linked, of course, to the artificial intelligence transformation. A lot of money has been spent on getting these computer chips in place and the storage in place and connecting to the electricity grid, although there's a real question about how much value add there is into the economy at the moment because these AI companies are overseas enterprises. But then we've also got household spending rising 0.5% in the quarter, but that's almost entirely driven by spending on essential goods and services. Very little in the way of discretionary spending increase, just 0.1%. Now that might again indicate, now this data again is a little bit messy because it's like it's until the end of March. We had an interest rate hike in February. The war kicks off at the end of February, but the full impact, of course, of these interest rate rises hasn't been felt. The full impact of the extra inflationary pressures from the war hasn't been felt, but it seems like consumers were already starting to tighten their belts, weren't they?
Yeah, and it's kind of that first month where we had sort of the alarm bells ringing about fuel and a bit of that panic buying behaviour as well, but we didn't have the excise cut in effect. So that could play out in the next set of data as well. But yeah, really, you know, still household consumption growing, but with inflation where it is, you'd have to say, you know, a lot of it is based on spending more on essentials and things like that. And on the data centre side, it was kind of a bit of a mixed impact because there was a 16% increase in machinery and equipment investment. But then because a lot of things to, you know, load up these data centers with chips, et cetera, are imported, that actually detracts from our GDP. So that might be something that, you know, economists, the Reserve Bank, even though that was a drag in this quarter, you know, that's to help us run these data centers going forward. So it's not like it's a bad thing for the economy that we're importing a lot of this stuff. But in this quarter, it had a mixed impact on the outcome.
And one of the political debates this year has been around how important has public spending been in fueling the inflationary pressures in the economy. The government seems very happy that this time around, public final demand made almost no contribution to growth in the quarter. So just 0.1%, which was a major decrease from the previous quarter, which was 0.9%. Now, that's partly because of the end of the energy bill subsidies, but basically that cost that was previously being borne by the government is now just being borne by consumers. It should be less messy from now on. This has been one of the difficulties for the Reserve Bank, trying to work through what the inflationary pressures are when you've got these subsidies. But the government is at least happy that has occurred. But what do you think this does mean for the chance of a Reserve Bank hike at the meeting in June? The market's basically not pricing any chance of there being one. What was your take? Does this move the dial at all?
There really wasn't any market reaction. So as far as, you know, traders reacting to the initial analysis and numbers, they don't really seem to think so. The Aussie dollar's fairly flat and the chance of a rate hike in June seems to still be around 7% according to Reuters data. So yeah, it doesn't seem to have moved the dial, and you'd have to think it kind of buys them a bit more time, right? So we've had unemployment rising, we've had now growth slowing in the direction that they're forecasting. So perhaps that does give them that little bit of wiggle room, depending on where we see inflation playing out post this meeting, but perhaps they say, hey, the data we've got at the moment is moving in the direction we have forecast, so let's see what happens and then, you know, perhaps wait till August when we have more data available.
And that was kind of my impression at the last meeting. I felt like when you heard Michelle Bullock, the governor, speaking, to me it sounded like she was willing to, that wasn't everyone else's interpretation, but it felt to me that she was basically suggesting, we've done three, we're going to wait to see how this flows through. They felt that they dealt with at least the existing inflationary pressure. They hadn't dealt necessarily with the inflation coming from the war in the Middle East, severely limiting or interrupting the supply of energy around the world. But it did feel like they were going to wait, or at least they thought they might have some time to be able to wait to see how this flows through. The other thing to remember about this particular meeting is that the statement of monetary policy, just like GDP, comes out quarterly. So we won't have updated forecasts for the Reserve Bank for this meeting. We will for the next one. And it does often give them a kind of reason to actually move. Now, they obviously have also increased at a meeting which didn't have that update. But I think this time around, they'll probably be wanting to wait to see what their teams have done when it comes to forecasting the economy before they make the decision to hit the economy with another rate rise.
Yeah, that's what I took from Michelle Bullock at the last press conference as well. And it was interesting because she was really emphasising that point, which I didn't think came through as strongly in their post-meeting statement. That read slightly more hawkish to me, but then I don't think this provides any compelling reason for them to move. So, yeah, I think, and that seems to be what the market says too, but we've all got it wrong. The market's got it wrong, so who knows?
Let's see. A big decision was made this week when it comes to wages. This is the Fair Work Australia making a decision about the minimum wage in Australia. Now, the headline figure's pretty big. It's a little bit messy for some people to understand. 4.75% rise to the lowest minimum award rate, but it's actually an effective 6% wage increase for the lowest wage earners, those earning the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Now, this means, at the moment at least, that it's a real wage increase because it's above the current inflation rate. But there is a debate about whether or not that will continue to be the case if we do have an increase in inflation. We were hearing some economists talking about potentially a 6% inflation rate at some point this year. How important was this decision and what's the reaction been?
Yeah, so as you say, there's a couple of numbers floating around there. The minimum award rate, the 4.75% increase, that's the one that affects most people. So there's around 2.8 million workers who are on that minimum award rate that will directly impact. There's around 100,000 people who are on the very minimum wage. So that's that higher 6% increase, and that was to do with abolishing some really low paid categories. So that's essentially people who aren't in that award system, just making sure, you know, there is a minimum on their wage. So the award rate is also thought to feed through to other wages through enterprise bargaining. I guess it provides a signal for workers to go off when negotiating their own contracts, or, you know, for unions to use in their EBA negotiations. So even though it only applies to a portion of the population, and it should be noted as well, it's quite a low-paid portion of the population. Mm. It's a lot of casual and part-time workers in industries, you know, traditionally feminized industries that are lower paid. So it actually doesn't have a significant impact on the wage bill of Australia overall. It's not like there's going to be heaps more money forked out because of this, because those workers are typically lower paid. But obviously to the individual workers, it's very significant in helping them keep pace. And we heard that was the aim of the Fair Work Commission. They said, unfortunately, going back to before the inflation breakout in 2022, workers are actually still behind from then. And they said, we can't catch them up now, but we just wanted to make sure that they are ahead of where they would have been in the middle of last year. So they've managed to keep pace with inflation over the last year, but workers are still worse off in real terms than they were before, you know, the post-COVID inflation breakout.
Yeah. So this question, though, about how impactful it's going to be in the economy is fascinating to me because, yes, on one hand, it's a relatively small proportion of the population that's directly impacted. But as you say, there are lots of agreements that are linked directly to the Fair Work decision. And then it's also an important kind of scene setter. It provides a benchmark for negotiations for unions or even individuals who say, well, exactly, as you just saw, the Fair Work Commission has actually raised it by X amount. So, yes, business says that they're unhappy, that this is going to make it more difficult for them to be profitable, puts pressure on them when they're already dealing with high expenses, particularly when it comes to fuel. And some economists warn that this in turn can lead to higher requests for wages, and you can get into a dangerous wage cycle. But as you say, the argument from the Fair Work was, well, actually these people are behind. And the union argument is, well, this not only helps them to deal with the inflationary pressures in the economy, but also means that they have more money to be able to spend, and lower paid people will spend more of their income, a bigger share of their income, than higher paid people because they can't save as much. And so actually that can help an economy that is slowing.
Exactly. That's that kind of tension, I guess, for small business. And we heard that from some of the business owners we were talking to yesterday, saying, you know, I think workers really deserve this. But on the other hand, a cafe owner in Sydney was saying, you know, I really have nowhere else to get money from. I have to pass this on to customers now. And then, you know, who are those customers? The people who've just got the wage rise potentially, who more of it's going to be eaten up if prices start to go up. So it will be interesting to see if it does get passed on to prices. There seem to be pretty mixed views from economists. I found yesterday some were saying it would add quite a bit to inflation. I think AMP even added an additional rate hike to their forecasts. So interesting there. But then there was a bunch of others saying, no, it's not really that significant. So it seems to be a bit of people don't really know where we're necessarily heading at the moment in terms of that. But, you know, if you have the economy slowing, you could also just naturally see businesses having to fold, unfortunately, as well. So if you are one of those businesses that's operating really close to the line and you can't afford to absorb this wage rise and your workers, you know, are going to potentially have to lose their job, or you can't pass it on to customers, customers can't afford to pay. I think that's unfortunately the reality of what you do see when the economy slows down.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that strikes me, particularly compared to America, where Australia's minimum wage is much higher than the minimum wage that in many places in America in particular. It's different in different places. But one of the things I think higher minimum wages does is that it forces employers to try to get more out of their employees. You know, you want that person to be even more efficient. If you're paying someone more, then you need to be getting more out of them. And that can, I think, incentivize greater productivity. So, yes, on one hand, I think the kind of, I guess, traditional conservative view maybe when it comes to high wages is that causes less people to be employed. But I think a counterpoint is, well, it forces the employer to get more from their workers. And we know people keep talking about we need greater productivity. Well, is this an incentivization for people to get more productivity out of those individuals by training them up, getting them to do more, utilizing new technologies, potentially AI.
Yeah, not to bring it all back to AI. Isn't that the whole idea? I guess, you know, that
all roads lead to AI at this point, I think, in society, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know how the cafe owner would be using that, but, you know, maybe they'll have the robot.
Payment systems, QR codes, the whole thing's kind of transformed, right?
So yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's a very optimistic view, Carrington. So
let's see how it plays out. But as you said, I think there is, I have been surprised by a lack of consensus about exactly what this means. It did seem to be closer to what the union wanted than what businesses wanted. And the government definitely wanted to claim credit for this. They seemed happy at how high the increase was. But yes, they'll be less willing to claim it if we do have major economic troubles ahead, and a lot of it will be blamed on this, I'm sure.
Yeah, you'd have to say over the past couple of weeks since the budget, it hasn't really been a great mood for business and small businesses publicly in terms of, you know, the views they're espousing. I don't think they're feeling too looked after at the moment. So this was probably not what the business groups wanted to hear yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. That is it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Reminder that right before this episode in your feed is this morning's Fuelcast update with Ian Verinder, where we take the time to unpack the latest on the global energy crisis. So you don't miss it or any of our episodes, make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send in a question, you can email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. Catch you next time, Steph.
Bye.